really enjoyed it at A level.
Yeah.
And in all honesty, I didn't know what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
I knew
still don't.
Yeah, I'm still not 100% sure on what I want to do, but I knew I always wanted to go to university because it had this glorified experience around it, which we spoke about last week. And I was like, I want that experience. I want to go into doing that. And then I was like, but I don't necessarily, I don't want to go to med school. I have a fear of the doctor. There is no way I want to be doing medicine. And I was like, I don't want to do anything really super STEM like maths or chemical engineering or anything. So I was kind of thinking, well, what do I actually want to do? Picked a subject that I love. And I think as well, it's such a fluid subject in what it can go into that I was like, well, I can branch it off into anything then.
It's super kind of applicable.
And I've ended up at a radio station. So
yippee!
Yeah, exactly. But it's interesting that the way he words it is like the default choice being law school. And then I think to how many people I know that didn't know what they wanted to do. So they picked law.
See, I have a different experience with that. Of all of the people that I know going into law is because they studied politics or something in that sphere of international studies, politics, etc. And then the way that they saw themselves getting employed after that was going into law. So it was because they were super passionate about this thing and then moving forward. But I feel like for them it was less of a default choice.
That's interesting. Maybe it's an English thing. Who knows? But I wonder if university as an institution actually fuels an expansion of meaningless jobs. Because I've spoken to my parents briefly because when they were going to university, there was a lot less range in the courses available. And you kind of went to university if you were going into what was classed as a profession.
Yeah.
And now, obviously, there's a whole range of stuff that you can end up doing at university, especially, like, here, the way you can, like, major and minor in different things. Like, the breadth is definitely huge. That does that expand into making meaningless jobs because there's now more degrees that are not kind of professions in the, like, classic sense of the word? Bless you.
Thank you. I've been perfecting my silent sneezes.
Yeah. Silent sneezes to not hurt the listeners' ears.
Or eyes. I don't know. Maybe you can see sound. Yeah, I feel like what that leads my brain to think about is then the passion. Because I feel like a menial job, if you have passion in it, I feel like it is no longer menial. You might be doing this repetitive task, but if you love that, there is a value in that, and that's a personal value to you. You feel happy, you feel satisfied with what you're doing. Maybe you feel like you're making an impact. And I think that's really cool, but I feel like there's so many people I know that just don't like school. They don't like what they're learning about, but they feel like they have to, whether that is for the money reasons, for parental pressure, or just they're burnt out. School is really hard, and a lot of the people in school right now had a part of their education be during the pandemic, and that was super taxing on many people's mental well-being and their ability to find motivation. And so I know personally I had to do a lot of work after that I'd fallen into patterns and routines. I was also super concussed over COVID, so I couldn't really look at the screens, and so my drive was really bad coming out of that. So I took a year off because I was at the beach with my friend and we were like, why aren't we taking a year off? And we're like, I don't know. Okay, let's do it. and went from there, which was very impactful and positive in my life because I was able to revive that drive to learn and everything. And I think that's something that, like, breaks my heart is to see, because learning is so cool, and I work at a preschool back in Seattle, and those kids are so curious about everything. It's so cool. But then you go to a university classroom, and so many people are checked out, not paying attention, and you would think that people would be a little bit more checked in because they're paying to be here.
It's a choice of coming to university.
It's a choice.
It's not, like, mandatory education.
And yeah, in theory, you've chosen what you're supposed to be studying. And it's just that joy is taken out, and that is just where I find the most sadness.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we're going to listen to a song, and we'll come back with some more discussion. This is Our Potential by Jaya Bremer. Rebecca did our song selections for today.
Yeah, so some calm song choices. I mean, last week's one was a bit more, I guess, upbeat indie rock.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been in slow song mode.
Yeah, I feel like it's a beautiful day. Take some deep breaths, you know?
Mm-hmm. Welcome back to Sociologic on CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby Campus and Community Radio from Simon Fraser University. I'm Rebecca.
And I'm Kaylin.
And I realize I never actually introed myself at the start. So in case this is the first time you've tuned in, that is my name, the other voice next to Kaylin's.
Yep.
And we have just been discussing menial labor and kind of the idea of, like, are we going into a society that has way more pointless and meaningless jobs, and how it's kind of linked with university and, like, passion and happiness. And just before the song break, you were talking a bit about COVID and how COVID kind of, I think, sucked a lot of passion out of everybody. And it was very hard for people to then find it again and want to motivate themselves to kind of get back into life and routine.
For sure.
And looking at that with kind of, I guess maybe the job market, how it is now, how are we as a society defining what is a meaningless job and what is not a meaningless job, what is necessary, what is not? Because we briefly spoke about, like, striking and how you see the drastic effects of striking on jobs that people would consider maybe not, like, the absolute, like, top ranking jobs, but for they sure. have the biggest effect on society. So how are we defining what is meaningless?
Yeah, I feel like following with what Graeber was talking about in the article we've been following, is the idea of those repetitive tasks that aren't making the biggest impact, sucking the joy out of people. I feel like there's that dual, it's a two-pronged thing. There's the feelings that people have about their work, and if they are not getting anything out of their work, whether mentally, emotionally, etc., if it's just causing them harm, essentially, on their mental side of it, and then also the actual impact of the job, of what is the impact, say, like a bus driver. If a bus driver strikes, the bus won't run. People can't get to their places. But other jobs, and we find these more in, I feel like it connects very strongly with the division of labor, factories, Harrison Ford with the assembly line of, rather than people having these skills to be able to create these whole things, they make simply a part, and it's the de-skilling of the labor force where people don't necessarily, there's less problem solving, you're doing these repetitive formulas. Mm-hmm. Say McDonald's, right? You're not creating any, there's a recipe, it's bun, lettuce, tomato, cheese, burger, whatever, bun, you know? Those types of things, where there's a formula and that creativity is taken out of it.
Mm. So you're just kind of regurgitating the same.
Mm-hmm. Over and over and over again, day after day.
Because it's like
pushing French fries for a paycheck.
For the paycheck. Because it made me wonder, is like, do we define meaningless as something that doesn't add joy to your life? Is it meaningless in that way? Or are we looking at it like personally to you, is it meaningless? Mm-hmm. Or is it meaningless to society?
Yeah.
Because it will be two different things. Because in, like, one way you could say that being a bus driver is meaningless to you personally because you don't get any joy out. You drive the same route day in, day out, day in, day out, and you don't enjoy it. But it's not meaningless to society because the minute you take that bus driver out, it affects a whole structure and a whole heap of people that rely on that bus.
For sure. So, I feel like at that point, then, we're talking a little bit more about value. Because to me, meaningless is the very personal of, is this giving me meaning in my life, you know? Plus also the impact. Yeah. But the value of a bus driver is pretty high, but our personal value, say, what do we place on the CEO of something? That is viewed as valuable, but how is it any more valuable than the person working on the assembly line creating the product that the CEO is then overseeing the management and selling of?
Yeah. Because it's interesting if, like, we think about who decides what's meaningless and what's not meaningless when you're looking at it in society. And if you look at socialization, where you're getting throughout your whole childhood, adolescence, and adulthood, you're being socialized into society's values. Mm-hmm. You're being socialized into what is society's accepted norms to achieve mm-hmm. society's values, and that's what's meaningful.
Yeah.
So even from like primary socialization with like your family and education, you're kind of having your passion and happiness even stripped away slightly from just being socialized into society
yeah.
to be able to be socially integrated in mm-hmm. and to function in it and to help society's stability. God, so many S's.
Mm-hmm.
But to help with society's stability.
Yeah.
That you're taking away that thrill and the happiness from a young age already.
Yeah. I feel like to further break down what socialization is, mm-hmm. you kind of were touching on it. But it's just all how you learn everything, essentially. Mm-hmm. How you learn, what words to use, how to exist in society, how to interact with other people, how to interact with people older than you, how to interact with your peers.
What's acceptable, what's not.
What's acceptable, what's not. Yeah. And in that, I was watching, like, this YouTube reel or something yesterday, and it was this guy who was just talking about how we're not supposed to move our bodies as much as we do. And he was doing all of these contortionist things and climbing trees and stuff and wearing the shoes with all of the toes are separated. And I was like, I kind of agree with this. I love moving and stuff. Mm. But I become really stir crazy when I don't. And I feel like that's a good example of we're socialized to be able to sit in one place mm-hmm. and listen to our teachers and stuff like that is yeah. an example. Is how that connects.
That reminds me of how girls are socialized to be ladylike.
Yes.
And I remember some of my first sociology lessons in A-levels being about this, of like how girls are socialized to like be prim, proper, sit, legs crossed, like how mm-hmm. I'm sat like now, and quiet, and you don't like be outward, you're very passive
mm-hmm.
in like your emotions and things. Mm-hmm. I know you socialize that from the get-go, because I distinctly like remember I was kind of a bit of a crazy child. I was very loud.
I love it.
Very loud. I was like out and about. I was constantly doing things, and mm-hmm. probably between me and my brother, I was definitely the loudest.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother's older than me, but we were very like polar opposites. And I remember my mum being like, "That's not very ladylike." And I'm thinking, "What do you mean it's not ladylike?" And it's interesting that I look at that more now
mm-hmm.
as a 20-year-old, thinking, interesting that me being kind of a loud child and excitable and fun mm-hmm. and just blowing the house down with God knows what and being like just very, I say extroverted, but expressive,
mm-hmm.
was even considered not ladylike then. And I look at how I am now and I would say, yeah, I'm probably more reserved now. I'm a lot quieter. Mm-hmm. I remember my mum being like, you need to cross your legs to sit as like a lady. And I now just do it out of like muscle memory.
Yeah.
Sit with my legs crossed.
For sure. No, I feel like, yeah, it's so interesting to go back and think about all of the different ways and reasons why you do what you do.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I like that you can trace it to distinct points, and some things it's more over time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like I was such a rule follower, and just because at some point I realized that if I followed the rules, the people would like me more.
Yeah,
specifically the people with the power.
Yeah. And so. It's interesting. I'm thinking of like people with power. Transitioning into another quote that I pulled out from the article, on how they said, well. I can't remember what the guy's name is that wrote the article.
David Graeber.
Him, yes. He said that the ruling class has figured out that a happy and productive population with free time on their hands is a mortal danger.
Yeah.
And the way he phrases that, with mortal danger, it's like catastrophic that people mm-hmm. be happy
yeah.
in their free time.
I mean,
for the ruling class, for the bourgeoisie, yeah, for the exactly. system they've created. Yeah.
This is super connected to all of Marx's...
Yeah.
All of everything, a lot of what he talked about in terms of if, like I was saying earlier, mm-hmm. if people have time to think and critically look at what they're doing or and the systems they're part of, they're going to realize that it's not just and that they don't want to be in that system anymore. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's kind of there's that idea of, like, your kid will go to college and get radicalized.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like a lot of that can be contributed to the fact that they just have more time to think, and they're being...
Yeah.
They're in this place to learn, but they're also being exposed to ideas from people in different places.
I think that's one thing sociology is great for.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you are exposed to, like, so many different perspectives, so many different ideas, and you're constantly asked to question things. Mm-hmm. Not just accept it, question mm-hmm. it. Why? Like, I remember, in first year, my lecturer, when he got us to write an essay, and he was like, I don't want you to just sit and accept what I'm telling you. Like, write an essay and question what I'm saying. Yeah. Critique what I'm saying. What's wrong with what I've said?
Yeah.
Like, saying sure. it that way. And I think, like, God, I can't... The teacher, the one that's teaching stuff, I can't critique them. They're the power of all knowledge.
Well, yeah, because like, we're taught they must that know they're right. They must know so much more than us. And definitely I go into my lecture halls and I'm like, wow, you know so much and this is so cool and teach me everything you know, please.
Mm.
But, yeah... we're taught to accept that power distribution. But
yeah.
Why? Why would my experiences and my knowledge be any less useful in a debate? Or if I know stuff about... If I feel like I'm confident in a subject, I feel like it's good to refute. And I feel like that's what... I appreciate a lot of my professors have been very good about trying to... induce debates and discussions while allowing people to have their different perspectives. I feel like when I was doing my college application stuff, I had originally applied to a much smaller school, a smaller liberal arts school in a pretty liberal left city. And I ended up not going there because I was just very worried about echo chambers and the cancel culture. I really wanted to be able to hear other people's perspectives.
Mm.
And I feel like I've definitely gotten that from Vancouver being up here. SFU is a bigger school. It's still in like a fairly left-leaning like a fairly liberal city. But you get people from all over and a very large international population.
Yeah.
That's
one thing I've noticed that my parents actually pointed out when they were over here visiting, and they said that BC has, because we've visited on holiday other parts of Canada, like on the East Coast. And when I came over here, I didn't know much about Indigenous relations or the Indigenous history of Canada as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it interesting that we didn't really... clock much towards Indigenous history when we visited the East Coast, but from like within my first week in BC, I was kind of exposed to it and I was learning about it and things like that. And them saying that BC itself is probably the province out of the whole of Canada that's focusing more on Indigenous truth and reconciliation and things like that, which goes towards its more liberal, I get left-leaning
side. Yeah, I definitely remember when I moved up here and I was just like, whoa, this is so cool. We're talking about this. We don't just talk about this in the classroom and then you go outside.
And you see it around the uni. Like, you walk around the AQ and there's so much, like, Indigenous art and sculptures and stuff. Yeah, and, like, up by the Lake Pond thing, and there's the boat that's displayed, like, on one of the corners.
Yeah, for sure.
Things. And we don't, like... I love that because I didn't know a single thing about the Indigenous peoples over here. And it was something where I felt incredibly ignorant, not knowing anything coming over here, to then, like, being exposed to it. And I went off and, like, researched it myself, but also being exposed to it to here at the station. And then also when I walked around the campus and seeing it around.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I feel like we have... gone on a tangent. I can't remember where this was linking
with
menial labor.
But yeah, what about the work that you do? Do you, I guess, what do you want to be when you grow up?
What do I want to be when I grow up? God, the $1 million question. I always, it's quite funny that I'm going to say this now, but I was toying when I was 17 and trying to decide what to do at university. I was toying between either going a journalistic route, which is where I am right now, Or taking a law route, which is quite funny considering I talk about my friends and they took law because they didn't know what they wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I haven't really delved much further into the law route, but I had a passion. I don't know if I still have it because I've been kind of focusing more journalistically, but I would say I had a passion on human rights law.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a passion on legislation and where legislation is having its pitfalls.
For sure.
Particularly, I heavily focused. I did like a mini dissertation when I was 17, 18 on the Equality Act in the UK.
Ooh.
And specifically on gender discrimination. And it was, has the Equality Act in 10 years it's been in legislation actually done anything?
Ooh.
And was it successful? And how am I defining whether it was a success or not?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I kind of toyed between law and I toyed between journalism, probably more investigative journalism than just journalism. And I just have a passion of looking at the human rights approaches to things and where legislation, I love to talk about where legislation looks like it's doing something. Is it actually doing anything? Because I find, like, for example, the hashtag MeToo movement lost a lot of fuel in recent years, I personally feel.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if it's because, oh, well, people in power are having the kind of discussion a bit. Like, some legislation's had some tweaks and changes, but it doesn't actually change much. Like, where's the actual change? Mm-hmm. What are we actually seeing? Like, gender pay gap is still very prominent.
Mm-hmm.
Sexual harassment in the workplace still very prominent.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, I guess, where my passion lies in line with my degree. Whether I'll end up doing human rights journalism, investigative journalism, or human rights law, who knows? I feel like I'm still yet to find something that I think I could do every day till the day I die.
Mm-hmm.
But what about you?
See, I more have a metric rather than something I specifically want to do. I want to help people and enjoy what I'm doing. And I think as long as what I'm doing falls into those categories, I think I will be pretty content.
Yeah.
I do think it would be really fun to work as an outdoor teacher, though.
An outdoor teacher?
Yes, which does not fall under my degree at all, but
yeah,
it would just be so cool.
Yeah. It's like my dad always, one thing that he made sure he raised me and my brother with, and I cannot even count how many times he told me and my brother this, but he stressed the importance of whatever you end up doing in your life, it brings you happiness, because he's in a job, well, he was in a job that didn't bring him any joy, and it's because he didn't know what he wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was kind of like pushed into a sector that would have given him a good salary, he'll be comfortable in life, by him not being sure of what he wanted to do, right? And there's one thing that he was like, I never wish that for my kids. So it's like, since I was born, I've had this, like, repeatedly said to me, something that brings you joy, something that brings you happiness, something that's gonna, you can see yourself doing in 40 years, no matter what income it brings, if it gives you 1p an hour, sorry, 1 cent or something, like, doesn't matter. If you get happiness out of it, there's no, you can't put a price on happiness.
Yeah,
you can't put a price on your joy.
For sure. That's so beautiful.
Yeah.
And I think,
shout out to my dad,
we'll leave you with that awesome advice from Rebecca's dad.
Yeah.
I'm Kaylin.
I'm Rebecca. Rebecca.
Thanks for listening to Sociologic. We're going to finish up today with the song is called Running Through Colors by Fantagram.